NATO and the U.S. being strategic, getting rid of all their outdated, diverse equipment to Ukraine so as to make an easy case to taxpayers to fund all new weapons, making them consistent across the NATO force?
No, that they're not being strategic. Anytime you come up with something that's too clever by far, too clever by half, I think is the term that's used.
Remember, what that means, though. Do you know what that means?
That the people that are doing this are fundamentally incompetent people. And they're not that clever. This would require a level of coordination, a level of insight, a level of maturity, a level of patience that doesn't exist in NATO. First of all, they're not getting rid of all their outdated, diverse equipment. If they were, they've already gotten rid of it. There's internal debates going on right now about, you know, are we going to give them a Leopard 2? Yeah, we'll give them 12. That's not enough. Give them 13. Are we going to give them a Challenger 2 tank? You know, if this was the coordinated strategy you're saying, they'd already be giving this stuff out. NATO is a confused mess. And the tragedy is their confusion will lead to more Ukrainian deaths, is leading to more Ukrainian deaths. And again, that's my comeback to all you allegedly pro-Ukrainian people out there. You're literally killing the people you claim to be defending by supporting these policies, by supporting a dysfunctional NATO, by supporting an insane United States. I mean, my God, by sitting there, you're ready for this one, Jeff?
Yes, I'm ready.
It's one of the best ones of the night. I was put on the Center for Countering Disinformation's hit list. No, they don't call it a hit list, blacklist. I was blacklisted. I'm an information terrorist. I am a war criminal. And the number one complaint they had against me, the number one complaint was that I dared say that Ukraine is a proxy of NATO, that this is a proxy conflict. And yet, the Ukrainian Minister of Defense just came out yesterday bragging. We are a proxy army for NATO. We are dying for NATO. It is our blood, not theirs. They must give us equipment for this. I look forward to him being right next to me on this list because I've been saying that since day one because it's the truth. But finally, he had to say it because you can't pretend otherwise. What was the extent of the conflict between Western Ukrainians and the people of Donbass? Understand this. The people of West Ukraine are not, they are distinct people from the Donbass. Donbass is primarily ethnic Russian. The people from Western Ukraine are primarily from Galicia. Stepan Bandera and the other extreme Ukrainian nationalists are Western Ukrainians. Their beef is they want their own homeland. You know, they want to have this area that they call Ukraine. But the development of what is now the Ukrainian state has been far more complicated than that. First of all, up until 1939, the territory that is now Western Ukraine was actually Poland. And so the big beef that the Western Ukrainians, the people we call Western Ukrainians now, the Galicians, had was with the Poles. Stepan Bandera was actually put on trial and convicted of murder. He was supposed to be executed by the Poles because they had a problem with the Poles. The Galicians don't like the Poles. This is why in 1943 we have the Volyn massacre, where Bandera's people spent months going into village after village of Polish people and literally burning them to death. And to all the people out there that try and come up with this little historical thing, the Slav Ukraine has been around since the time of Taras Bulba back in the 1500s, and there was this, that, and the other thing. I don't care. Because, you know, the Western Ukrainian nationalists today aren't sitting there saying that we believe in, you know, some figure from the 15th century. They're saying we support Stepan Bandera. That's the photograph on the wall behind them. That's the photograph they carry around. That's the guy they name all the time. They treat as a hero. And Stepan Bandera's people, when they burn these Polish villagers to death, would shout out, Slava Ukraina, glory to Ukraine, glory to the heroes. That was their war cry. So when I hear it today, don't try and fool me or fool anybody else into thinking, well, that's just part of the historical past. No, we know damn well what you're up to, you stupid people. You're odious ideology of extreme nationalism. White supremacy is what it is. You view the Poles as subhuman. You view the Russians as subhuman. That's just the reality. But in 1939, because of the Ribbentrop-Molotov treaty or agreement. When Germany invaded Poland, Russia moved in, sort of stabbed Poland in the back, according to some interpretations. And they took over the territory that we now call Western Ukraine. And they incorporated it in. And that includes the population. So now Bandera's people have a grudge against the Soviets. And so much so that they actually allied themselves with Adolf Hitler, so that when Germany invaded in 1941, they came in and they carried out horrific crimes against Jews, against Russians. They're the enemy of Russians. They don't like the Russians. They, you know, today we have all of the Western Ukrainians grow up, that being taught, they call them Muskal, which is sort of a slang for Muscovites, for people from Moscow. And it's not a term of endearment. It's a belittlement term. They also call them orcs. And we've seen them. They saran wrap them to the poles, pull down their pants, paint their face green, beat them, and leave them out exposed. And, you know, that's just because they treat them as subhumans. They don't treat them as humans. So, you know, here's the problem. You know, I try to keep an open mind, and I could be sympathetic to people who say, look, our historical development in Galatia is separate from Russia. And therefore we feel that this land here, where, you know, our forefathers were, should be a separate country, an independent country. Okay. I'm not debating that. What I have problem with is when you say we are a superior race. Now we got some big problems. And then they say, and we're going to build our land, as Stepan Bandera said, we're willing to kill 1 million people or more. I got a big problem with that as well. This is a hateful cause. I'm not saying that the cause of an independent Ukraine is hateful. I'm saying that the cause of Western Ukrainian ultranationalists is a hateful cause, because it's built on death, destruction, murder, rape, torture. Nothing good. There's nothing democratic about it. There's nothing noble about it. It's an odious ideology. And unfortunately, it manifests itself in hatred towards ethnic Russians. And in Eastern Ukraine, in the Donbass, there is a significant concentration of ethnic Russians. The Western Ukrainians and Eastern Ukrainians will not get along. Not because the Eastern Ukrainians can't. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that the Russians are perfect, but I'm telling you right now, you know, it's a nation that has, I forget how many nationalities or languages, 134. It's a large number. It's a very diverse nation. Yes, the Russians are the dominant race. Yes, the Russian language is the dominant language. But my God, this is a country full of different peoples who can come together, are coming together, and are living in peace with one another, peace and harmony with one another. So it's not impossible for the Russians to live in harmony with the Galatians, with the Western Ukrainians. It's not impossible from the Russian perspective. But from the racist white supremacist perspective of the Western Ukrainians, it's impossible to live in peace with the Russians. They view them as subhumans. They call them orcs. They call them Muskals, and they do horrific things to them.
Where does this idea that Russia did not want to implement Minsk originate?
You know, one of the things that needed to happen was that the Ukrainians needed to gain control of the border areas. But in order to gain control of the border areas, there has to be a ceasefire in place. Okay. So you're the Donbass people. You've risen up, you fought, and now there's a peace agreement supposed to bring about a ceasefire. And the the Ukrainians are saying, you know, yeah, we got to change the constitution, but we're not going to do that until we get control of the border. But the other guys are saying that's not what the agreement says. It doesn't say this has to happen before this. It actually says that you got to change the constitution and then we'll secure the border. But the Ukrainians wanted to jump straight into securing the border, jump straight into taking control of the territory without conceding any of the other things that they were supposed to concede. And, you know, that's something that, they weren't, you know, Russia was not, here's the other thing he misses out. Russia wasn't a party to the Minsk agreement. Russia's not a party. It's an agreement between, you know, France and Germany were the guarantors, and it's between the government of Ukraine and the people of the Donbass. Russia was somebody else out there, but Russia's not a signatory. They're not a party to the agreement. Russia has no obligations, duties, responsibilities. So that's where the guy's wrong. He's sitting there saying that, you know, it's Russia's fault. It doesn't work that way. It's Ukraine's fault. And now we know. I mean, let's stop playing games here. Now we know that Ukraine was never serious about. I mean, how can you even begin to buy into his bullshit when we know that Poroshenko has said it was never a serious agreement to begin with? We were never going to implement it. So don't come up with excuses about Russia not doing this, this not happening. Ukraine has admitted straight up, and so have the Germans and the French, that Minsk was never going to be implemented. So why do we play a game where we say, oh, no, it was a serious agreement, and it's all Russia's fault because they wouldn't go force the Donbass people to accept control of the border zone? Hey, dude, stop. The president of Ukraine said it was all a sham, for one purpose, to buy time to build up the Ukrainian military to NATO standards, to do what? To attack militarily the Donbass and Crimea. The gentleman who claims to be a Russian patriot was deflecting from the fact that the Minsk agreement was never a serious agreement in the eyes of the Ukrainian government. Anything he says doesn't matter.
Why was Ukraine able to attack the Engels Air Force Base not once, not twice, but three times last December?
Russian air defense. You know, the first time you might be able to get away with it. It was a new weapon system. They basically converted a drone. I think it's the Tu-141. It's designed to, you know, be fired and simulate an aircraft so your air defense can look at it, shoot it down. It was modified. I don't think the Ukrainians did it by themselves. I think they had help. I don't know what they did to do it, but they got close enough. The Russians did shoot them down. It wasn't that the missile successfully penetrated everything and landed on its own. It came into Engels, got shot down, came down, damaged three aircraft. The same thing. There was never a successful penetration. Everything was engaged, but engaged too close to the airfield. The biggest worry isn't the drones. There was one story that insinuated that the Ukrainians had infiltrated a special forces team that was doing terminal guidance, meaning that they were designating targets on the ground and that there was some sort of homing device on the drone that came in and allowed it to strike with, you know, at least attempt to strike with precision. Clearly there's a problem. And the Russians have to, if they don't want it a fourth time, the Russians will have to identify what went wrong and take measures to deal with it. You know, the fact that we're not, I can't tell you what the Russians are doing, probably means that they're doing something. They don't want us to know about it. So, you know, one thing I can say about the Russians is, they're not perfect. They make mistakes, but when they make mistakes, they identify the error and then they seek to rectify the error and move on and make sure it doesn't happen again. Now you're going to say, yeah, but they attacked three times. Who knows? Did they use three different strategies to attack? Some people say that they flew on commercial airline routes, so they were mimicking commercial airlines. Some people say that they flew a route that was guided by U.S. intelligence to get through the gaps in Russian air defense. I don't know. I think the Russians know, and the Russians are doing what they can to ensure it doesn't happen again.